The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms.
It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manning.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manning, welcoming you to the place where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. And this week is no exception. Today we're going to talk about sleep, napping, dreaming, how to make the most out of all three. Our special guest is an investigative reporter who's covered an array, myriad of topics. And his name is Scott Carney, first time on Guys Guys Radio, and he's a real guys guy, very interesting guy. He's written a lot of books on so many different subjects based on his investigative reporting, and I think you're really going to enjoy our conversation. It's a little bit different, it's new, but we're going to cover something that we all experience each and every day, and that is sleep, sometimes napping, and also dreaming. So I think you're really going to have fun with this show today. You know, so many Americans, I think it's like up to 80%, they have issues with sleep. They don't get their proper sleep, the amount of hours that's necessary. You know how many hours of sleep we're supposed to get for a healthy lifestyle? 9. And how many of us out there get 9 hours of sleep every night? Things changed when the electric light bulb was invented, because people would basically base their sleep and their work activities. When the sun was up, you work. When the sun went down, you finish things up and go to sleep. And now it's the electric light can allow you to work and work and work even longer. And so a lot of people are sleep deprived. And also our society, as we know, has so many stressors working on us all the time that it gets really difficult to get our proper night's rest. I have employed a number of techniques over the years, so I'm very interested in hearing what Scott has to say about it from his research. And his book is called Dream, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So we're going to talk about also napping. You know, a lot of times it's difficult to find the time to nap, even though you really even only need about 20 minutes or 90 minutes. Scott breaks it down two ways. And also sometimes it's difficult just to find a moment where you can catch those 20 minutes because we're at work or whatever, but it's something that is important to do if you can find that time. And if you work remotely, catching that quick 20 minutes is a good thing. And if you can take yourself away from the work for like an hour and a half at some point, get those 90 minutes in, could be very revitalizing for your body, according to science and according to the research Scott has done. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into some tips on how to make the most of your naps, whether it's a short one or a long one, and about dreaming, what dreams represent, how to keep track of dreams, keeping a dream journal, etc. There's a lot of information we're going to cover today, the different stages of sleep that are embedded in our sleep patterns. And we're just going to have a lot of fun today, because I know that sleep can be really challenging when we're stressed out or we don't feel good. And I have found another number of methodologies that work for me. And I want to hear what Scott has to say about that. So I think you're really going to enjoy our conversation here on Guys Guys Radio, because who doesn't want to get more sleep and more good sleep that's revitalizing? Because how many times do you wake up and you just don't feel rested? You just don't feel like you've gotten a lot of sleep, and you wake up and you're stressed out before you even get out of bed. One tip I will give you before our interview begins is that, and something I have done that's really worked for me, is take that cell phone, take that device, and put it aside. Don't keep it next to your head when you sleep at night. Put it far enough away where it's not going to intrude on you from an EMF radiation standpoint, but also from a point of that you're going to get distracted and looking at the light on the phone and scrolling and all the stuff that kind of plays with your mind and kind of gets in the way of helping you relax. That's one thing I would do. And since I've done that, and I start the day with my own version of prayer, affirmations, whatever, but whatever you do for yourself is fine. But if you pick up that phone, unless you really need to check something right away, and you start scrolling, as soon as you wake up, and the last thing you do at night. It keeps you pretty stressed out, I think. What do you think? Well, let's get into it with our special guest, Scott Carney. First time here on Guys Guiders Radio. He's an investigative reporter. He's traveled the world. He's covered so many topics, and he's written 5 books, including the worldwide bestseller, What Doesn't Kill Us, which is about the cold water immersion and the Wim Hof method. And maybe we'll touch on that, if not today, in our next conversation with Scott Carney here on Guys Guys Radio.
It's Guys Guy Radio.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio, it's the interview portion of our show, and we're welcoming in our YouTube and Rumble audience who can watch our interview here. And today we're going to talk about sleep and dreaming and napping and a lot more. Our special guest is an investigative journalist and anthropologist. His name is Scott Carney. I'm thrilled to have him on the show. First time, he's a real guy's guy. He's a really interesting person. He's done some great work. He's worked in some of the most dangerous and unlikely corners of the world. His work blends narrative, nonfiction with ethnography. And I don't even know what that is. But What Doesn't Kill Us was a New York Times best-selling book about kind of the cold immersion and the whole Wim Hof method and more. And also his other works are The Vortex, which is about the great Bola cyclone in Bangladesh that killed 500,000 people. The Wedge, which is about consciousness. The Enlightenment Trap, about how Tibetan Buddhism kind of got hijacked when it came to the West. He also has another book, very interesting, The Red Market, about organ brokers, child traffickers, bone thieves, and blood farmers. But today we're going to talk about his book called Dream. And it's all about, you know, so many Americans have trouble sleeping. But this is about how to sleep, what dreams are, what napping is, and how to get there. And there's some great exercises at the end of the book about yoga nidra, I believe it's called, and some other things. And it's just fantastic. So welcome to Guys Guys Radio for the first time. My special guest, investigative journalist, Scott Carney. How are you, Scott?
Robert, I love being here. Thanks for putting up with me delaying this over and over again because I had the worst cold of my life in the last week.
You know, it's so interesting because I've been tracking you. Scott's very, he's everywhere in social media, and he was sharing with us his, he's had a bad cold. And I actually, through that entire time, I've had a head cold, but not in the same severity. So what happened with you? What were your symptoms? You had a fever?
I figured it had to be something like COVID, right? But it felt like, you know, all the symptoms seemed right. I lost my smell. I had this just a tidal wave of snot that I mean, more than I think there's this hollow head thing going on. I was more snot matter than brain matter in there. I was just leveled. You know, I haven't been this sick probably in 30 years. Probably not since I was a kid. I just keep on coming up negative for COVID. So it's just a head cold, or maybe the tests are bad or whatever. I am getting out of it. And, you know, it's interesting. I was actually using some of the techniques in the book. There's these guided meditations where, you know, as you sleep, you know, when you're sick, you're really tired, right? Your body's like, I give up. I can barely string thoughts together. And one of the things that's so difficult when you are sick is actually getting good restorative sleep. And I was able to use some of the techniques that I'd learned in my book, which was originally about napping and then became about dreaming, I hope it helped. I mean, it still took me 7 days to recover, but I got a couple of good naps in because of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you a believer in supplementation? Did you do extra vitamin C, vitamin D, echinacea, ashwagandha?
I am just pretty much anti-supplement right across the board. I think most of them, I'm of the opinion that, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. And if you have a real deficiency that's identifiable, like, you know, you have beriberi and your thyroid's gone, or you have a goiter, then there's some definite supplements you should get. Your teeth are falling out from scurvy. Yes, vitamin C. But other than that, I'm not really a supplement guy.
Okay. I am. And the reason is because I don't think the food that we get, for the most part, unless you're eating purely organic, a lot of the other food with the process and everything that's added to it and the soil, I don't know if the soil has as much nutrients as it has in the past. So I, with my wife, we kind of cherry pick the supplements we want to take. And do they work or not? I don't know. I feel healthy. I feel good. I feel vital, but I do a lot of other stuff too. So,
but anyway. What you're missing in nutrients, you're making up in microplastics in your bloodstream. So that's
yeah. You know? You know, with the, particularly with the bottled water, people aren't aware of that, how many microplastics we're getting. But I guess over time and evolution, we just keep toughening up. So anyhow, let's talk about dreaming. I mean, so many Americans, particularly, have trouble sleeping. They can't nap. They have trouble meditating. I know from so many people, I do TM, and so many people I know, they can't quiet their mind from the monkey chatter. Taking a nap is a big effort. They don't sleep all night. And as older they get, it just the stress and everything else. So what was the inspiration, Scott, for you writing this wonderful book called Dream, The Art of Science and Slumber?
Yeah, so it was fascinating. I was hanging out with Brian McKenzie, who's this breathwork specialist who's, I think he's in the Bay Area now. And we were at sort of a performance event in Boulder, Colorado. And somebody asked him, what's your number one tool for recovery? You know, it's like sort of a standard question. And he just sort of threw it out there. It's like, I take naps. And he's like, someone should write a book on naps. And I was like, you know what? I love naps. Naps are like one of my favorite things in the world. And they're so underappreciated. And I thought that I would, why don't I write the book on napping, why we should do it, how to do it better, how they really just do make your brain operate at a higher level and can restore you in the middle of the day. And as I started working on that book, I found out that one, naps are amazing. There's lots of great physiology on why naps are great. But two, there's not much new to say about them, right? Like, other than the fact that, hey, you should go take a nap. Like, go take a nap if you feel tired, and giving someone that motivation, that is important. But in terms of like how to supercharge or like hack your naps, there's not too much to it. There's just like, there's probably about four pieces of advice that are really important. I'll just recount them to you now.
Please, please.
Take a nap around 2 or 3 in the afternoon when you start to feel tired. This corresponds with a melatonin dip that we all generally have if you wake up, between 6 and 8 in the morning. That would roughly be 8 hours after you wake up. Take a nap, spend at least 15 minutes, spend 15 to 20 minutes asleep, or, and this is super important, if you really want to go to sleep and really get a full rest, spend 90 minutes or more sleeping. There's a really interesting biological reason for this. If you sleep for just 15 minutes, you don't actually descend through the various stages of sleep to a place where it's, very deep. You only end up in stage 1 or the beginnings of stage 2 sleep. And those you can get out of very easily. But if you descend into later stages of sleep, it's sort of like right now we're both awake. If I just told you to go to sleep right now, you would have a really hard time doing it. Well, there's sort of this inertia that happens in normal sleep stages where you can't get out of a stage when you're in too deep. So, maybe you've had that experience where you wake up from a nap or sleeping too early and you feel like you're underwater. You're like, oh my God, everything is terrible. That's because you actually woke up in the middle of the 2 or 3 stages, stage 2 or 3.
So what are the four, so you've mentioned your four parts of the sleep cycle or four cycles within the sleeping. What are they for the benefit of everybody listening and watching?
Yeah, we scientists make sort of arbitrary markers on this. And actually, if you talk to some sleep scientists, there's 3 and some say there's 4 and some say there's 5.
Okay.
Let's say there's 4, right? You have the first one, which is hypnagogia, which is almost being awake. It's like when you put your head down in your pillow and you've made the intention to go to sleep and you closed your eyes and you're sort of drifting off and you're making maybe you're having some weird thoughts because you're being so abstract. That's called hypnagogia, and it is it's the first stage and it's very light and you can come right out of it right now if you go into it. And it's even sort of hard to differentiate, like, are you asleep? Are you not? Then we have stage 2 sleep where you actually do descend down, your body relaxes, your heart, your breathing gets slower, your heart slows down. And then this stage 2 is a sort of a more restful, light sleep. Then you have REM sleep. And again, this is where the stages get confusing. Some say there's a third, sometimes people say there's not, but you have a deep sleep where you're like really off like your brain is like in the barely doing anything. It's like so deep and so restorative. And if you wake up in deep sleep, it's really hard to get back into awareness. And then there's REM sleep, which is, you know, you've probably heard of REM sleep. This is where your eyes move back and forth really quickly. And that's a hallmark of what we mostly think of as dreaming. Now you have dreams in all the stages, but REM sleep, it's like a firework show. The dreams are super active. And REM is really probably the most important for cognition, because what happens in REM is where you start to process memories and emotional information that becomes very important for your life as you proceed, you know, when you're awake. And then it's interesting, you don't go from 1, 2, 3, REM, and then back out. You actually go 1, 2, 3, 2, REM, 3, 2, REM. I mean, it's not a cycle that's linear. It sort of has this unique cadence to the sleep cycles. But roughly they take 90 minutes to complete a full cycle, is about 90 minutes before you come back up to light sleep, where you can wake up easily. So if you're going to take a nap, aim for a short nap, no more than 20 minutes, or a nap of about 90 minutes, so you've completed that full cycle and you won't feel like crap.
So if you take the 20-minute nap, Scott, what are the benefits for that? You don't want to get kind of pulled out of the sleep cycle too early. So what is the significance of the 20-minute or so marker?
Yeah, 20 minutes is just before you're going to descend into stage.
Got it.
You know, a deeper stage of two sleep. You're not so far in on your momentum, your inertia into sleep that you can't come out of it. And what you are doing though is allowing your brain to get abstract. During the day, you are so hyper-focused. Like right now we're talking, you're looking at me. You're thinking, I hope you're thinking about what I'm saying, right? You're trying to process my information. That takes a lot of energy and attention. And you know, the culture in the West is to work hard all the time and be focused all the time, because we really empower focused thought. That's not always healthy. Like most animals aren't focused all of the time, and it's a lot of strain on the body. So 20 minutes, even if you don't actually fall asleep, even if you just lie down and just say, I'm going to try to zen out, it's hugely beneficial to the way your brain, you know, it just like undoes that tension. Not muscle tension, but actually mental tension. It just gives you a break. And in that break, when you go wide, your brain actually starts making novel connections about things. Because when you're focused on any subject, you know, let's say I'm working on a computer program, right? And I'm writing a document about sleep. Let's say I'm writing a book about sleep. I'm going to think about topics involving sleep all day because I'm going to be focused on that one thing. But when you actually rest and relax, you might have a thought about sleep coming in. You might have a rhinoceros coming in. You might have a childhood memory. And those sort of random pieces of information that come into your head help you form new creative thoughts. Maybe that thought about a rhinoceros was actually useful in my sleep book, but I would never have had it if I wasn't thinking abstractly.
Got it. Now, my special guest on Guys Guys Radio, the amazing investigative reporter and author, Scott Carney. We're talking about his book, Dream. You say that people are sleep deprived. I agree with you completely. How many hours of sleep should we get based on your research?
Interesting you asked that question. So there was this study done, I think it was in 1908, measuring what the average human slept during their day. And it was an epidemiological study. And they found that it was 9 full hours of sleep that happened just every day naturally. It was done only in America. It was an American-based study by the National Institutes of Health. After the electric light bulb was introduced like 2 years later, so the tungsten filament bulb was a very cheap electric light bulb that was syndicated all over the planet very cheaply by Thomas Edison. They did another study right after that, and they found that humans were getting 8 hours of sleep on average. And so the introduction of electric lighting took away a full hour of normal sleep for people. So now if we measure what the average sleep patterns are for Americans, it's about 7.5 to 8 hours is what we generally will get. But it used to be 9. So physiologically, we should probably be closer to that 9 number. But with that caveat put in there, everyone's physiology is different, and you can't say specifically who, you know, how much one person will get. It's really where you feel rested at the end of that time. And in fact, there are some people will think that they are genetically abnormal, and that they can subsist on like 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah, I've heard that.
That's about 1% of the population or 0.5% of the population. You, dear listener, are probably not that person, and you're just grinding yourself through. Someone who was that person was actually probably Thomas Edison, who really did survive and thrive on low amounts of sleep, which might explain why he created the electric light bulb in the first place.
Now, Scott, can people catch up, because we're so busy and we're doing all the time, and the light bulb has changed how we live and has kind of taken away that special hour of sleep that we need. Can people catch up? Can you like sleep in on the weekend? Is that from your research? Does that make a difference?
That's actually the standard. Most sleep doctors will say that for every hour of sleep that you miss off of what your body actually needs. And there are ways to test this. You can go to a sleep doctor to tell you what your chronotype is for how much sleep you actually need. But like for every hour that you take off of your sleep cycle, let's say you need 8 and you get 7 hours, you accrue 1 hour of sleep debt. That's the way they phrase it. So and the only way you can pay back a sleep debt is by sleeping for an hour. But it's an additive problem. So if you don't sleep, if you're getting 7 hours of sleep a night, you should be getting 8. At the end of that week, you have 7 hours of sleep debt that you have to pay back with actual sleep and rest. Napping, great way to do it. And the crazy thing is that that can accumulate for years, which leads to chronic exhaustion.
I was extrapolating that and like, wow, after 10 years, that's a lot of sleep that we're missing.
Right. And I have pushed back on some of these psychologists. I was like, come on, like if I'm 40 years old and can I accrue, you know, 20,000 hours of sleep? That it seems like there's some math that's wrong there in some way. But it's more of like a heuristic. However, eventually, if you accrue so much debt that you don't pay it back, it turns into chronic illness. It turns into other things in your body just compensating and going wrong.
Mm-hmm. How about meditation? If you, I've been meditating for years, and I just was gifted with, by Bob Roth, the CEO of the David Lynch Foundation. He got me into TM, and I've been doing it and I love it. 20 minutes twice a day. I have an app. I have a great app. I have a timer and I feel refreshed. That's my 20 minute nap, if you will. And sometimes I do drift off, but I get a little bing at the end and then I slowly come out of it. What's your thoughts on meditation as a substitute for napping? Or is it separate? They mutually exclusive?
It's a fascinating and very complex question. So TM is one type of meditation, and there are thousands of types of meditation. And a lot of them have very different neurological outcomes for you. TM's a more relaxed version, but there are meditations that are very focused and you're having these visualizations and you're trying to do things. And you can be mentally exhausted after some of these meditations.
That's true.
So I wouldn't just put it all in one big box. You sort of have to be a little bit more judicious with what type of meditation you might be doing. I would say, and I'm not a TM practitioner, but Yoga Nidra, which is a very old meditation, it's actually mentioned in the Rig Veda, which is a very old Hindu text, about 5,000 years old. It means yogic sleep. Nidra means sleep, yoga, to join or to yolk. And it is a way of consciously descending into sleep. So you're actually meditating while you are sleeping. And so it's a blending of that unconscious state with the conscious state, which is really, really interesting. Now, other meditations that where you are fully alert as you do it, my experience is that they are not as restorative. Other people have had different experiences than me. This is just my personal allocation here. I will also say that I had this interview recently with Willoughby Britton over at the Britton Lab. She's a neuroscientist at Brown University. And she has said that a lot of longtime meditators stop sleeping altogether, is that they rely on meditation to do their mental processing. And that can have negative side effects on some people, because sleep really is an important physiological thing that we evolved with since the beginning of not only humanity, but like mm-hmm. single celled life forms, everything sleeps. So if you're not giving your body the restorative cycles that we evolved from, you could be doing damage. And to think that we could consciously with meditative practices outthink what biology does, you might be running into trouble. Then again, I'm not an enlightened master. If it works for you, then I'm not going to be out here to tell you you don't meditate anymore. But I just want to highlight there could be problems.
So yoga nidra, you don't have to be down, if you will. You can be kind of conscious. You're not sleeping. Yeah. You're meditating, but you're conscious at the same time. Whereas something like TM, or if you're in your own type of guided meditation, you kind of go down and you're not aware of anything besides what you're focused on. Is that correct?
I can't speak to TM. You are the TM expert. Okay. I'm not going to speak to that. I will talk about yoga nidra, which is
Please.
That it's bizarre. It's like so awesome. So it's essentially, it's becoming aware of your body as you fall asleep and then thinking about your body in different ways as you do it. And it's when you first start, you do it with a playlist, like a YouTube video. And I have a YouTube video on my website, my channel. It's called Yoga Nidra. Go check it out. Where someone just reads you a playlist and you just sort of relax, you lie in your bed and you listen to their words, and they'll tell you that, you know, think about your body, you know, do a body scan, think about your toes, think about your knees, think about your arms, your head. And you go through that and you stretch a little bit, and then they tell you to sink deeper into relaxation. And if you just sort of give yourself over to their voice, and just say, okay, I'll do it, you end up in this state, which is very familiar because your brain starts going into the state of sleep, except that you're aware like you are when you're awake. So it's sort of this bizarre moment where you're both asleep physically, and yet your brain is aware. And I'd never really had that experience before because, like, oh, I've been here so many times before, but I'm actually looking around and being aware of it. And so you have this sort of dualistic moment. And the hope is that since sleep can be so restorative for you, that you're giving sort of subconscious messages to those repairing and restoring processes in your body to accentuate healing or other goals that you might have psychologically. And the science on that, like the hard science in the labs with the guys with the coats, it's not there. But there, I would say anecdotally, I've had really, really good experiences with it.
Now, how long is a session when you're doing that? And do you do it when you're lying down? You're reclining when you're doing this? And do you sometimes just fall into sleep for the night then? Or is it a short session and then you go to sleep separately?
Yeah, you can do both. There's many different ways to do it. In general, the typical yoga nidra intro stuff is about a half an hour thing. And you go into these deep states and then you come back out and you're guided in and out of those deep states. You could also ignore the playlist and just as long as it doesn't like fast forward to the next video, because that would be jarring. Then you could sort of continue sleeping. And I feel like, you know, I don't like protocols. Like, I don't like people telling you this is what you need to do to get your best sleep, to get your best whatever, the best supplement program, the best prayer program, the best way to drive. Like, no, I like people to be able to figure out for themselves and feel their ways through these techniques, because it's not like a one size fits all solution machine. It's a thing that you do and you practice. And just I must remind you, sleeping is enjoyable. Like, sleeping actually feels good, and you actually like yourself a lot more when you do it. So why not play with it? Like, why not have fun sleeping?
My special guest on Guys, Guys Radio, the informative and very interesting investigative reporter, Scott Carney. We're talking about his book, Dreams. So let's move to dreaming. Tell us about, what do we need to know about dreaming? Why is it important? How does it happen? How can we glean some benefits from it? Is there anything we can do? Lucid dreaming, I remember from reading all the Carlos Castaneda books. I always been trying to, like, can I see my hand in my sleep? Can I start to participate more? The whole bit. Talk to us about dreaming, Scott.
Yeah, so I think that we have this scientific problem in the world where we often talk about dreams as if they are nonsense, as if you're just having these things and they're meaningless. It's just flashing of lights in your brain. Or we think these are oracular visions that have intense meaning to them. And the truth is it's neither. It's sort of somewhere in between these two states. There's probably three or four main functions of dreaming. One is creativity. You know, remember when I said you normally in our day we're very focused, we're hyper-focused on single things. And in the when we're sleeping, we can be very, very wide. One thing that dreams allow us to do is to make novel connections, really random things. And a lot of times those random, you know, you're running down a street and the terrorists are following you, and then you see a woman in a pink dress and you want to go pet your cat, like these sort of random events.
Right.
Sometimes those things are just nonsense. Sometimes those random thoughts end up creating novel insights that you actually do bring with you back out of your sleep that become useful for solving problems. Like if I was thinking about, oh, I have to go work on a story and I have to go find a source. It's one of the things investigative journalists do all the time. We have to find sources. I might come up with a novel way to contact a source in a dream without even realizing it, because the brain relaxes and goes through stuff. That's one function. Another main function is forgetting. Normally, throughout the day, we have so much experience. Like you're looking at me right now. We're talking and you're getting all this information. You see that I'm wearing orange shirt. Mm-hmm. I got some books behind me, some of my books, some of these, here's some Dungeons and Dragons books. Like it's all sorts of stuff here. And most of that information, you don't need to know that in the future. Tomorrow, you do not need to know that I was wearing an orange shirt. It is irrelevant to your life. But your brain, because it's a computer essentially,
right,
collects
processor.
All of that information and it clutters it all up in your head. If you didn't have a way to remove that information, you would get overloaded. Your hard drive would be full. So what actually happens in dreams is it's deciding what information was salient and important and what information is not important. And so it's probably not going to remember my orange shirt. It's going to be like, forget that, but Scott maybe said one or two interesting things and I'll try to store these. And here's the fascinating thing about what dreams do is they take your information from your day, everything you did, and they extract the interesting parts and combine it and compress it sort of like a zip file in a computer. So it becomes like it's discard, but we'll just keep this stuff and it kernelizes it and creates, and that becomes sort of a central nugget of experience. And that gist, we could call it, that gist is an emotion. Like that, like these compressed ideas are how you feel about things. And we actually navigate the world in general, not because we're Vulcans, because we think about everything that's going on there and we're super logical. We navigate the world because of how we feel about things, because of things we've happened in the past. When you cross a street, you don't look at a car coming at you and you say, well, that car is moving at a predictable rate of 67 feet per second. There's 134 feet here. Therefore, I can make the crossing. No, you're not a Vulcan. You look at that car and you're like, huh. That feels like I might get squished. I'm not going to go in front of it. It was an emotion that did that. And that was actually because it had just compressed all this data from other events where you saw cars. And it created that emotion of like fear, essentially. And that is how we navigate the world. And it all happens in dreams. And one of the really great insights here is that, you know how you wake up in the morning and you didn't have a good night's sleep, right? Everything's wrong. Like, I'm just a mean person and I will overreact to my wife or my kid or my pet or whatever. The reason you are like that is because you didn't get the emotional processing time to reduce those gists. So that information is sort of overloading your brain because you haven't actually gotten the emotional processing time. And so when I've spoken to some, a family therapist, for instance, who talk about, you know, they're seeing couples in fights. The first thing that she says to clients who come into her, she's like, we're fighting about what, sex or money or whatever. The first thing she says is, well, how do you sleep? And she found that if she fixes the sleep, we don't need to talk about the other stuff because the other stuff sort of sorts itself out in a lot of cases. And so what one of the things that I just love about the sleep research and the dream research is if you work on sleep and you get to become a good sleeper, a lot of the other things that you didn't realize were unrelated get better.
Is a couple of questions here. that came up. One, is that because you're getting the rest, so things, the world doesn't seem as chaotic, number one. And number two, which was really my primary question that I wanted to ask, was about, are there ways, Scott, that we can kind of filter out what is the garbage in the dreams and what are the symbols that we need to glean information from that can help us lead our best lives?
A great question. First one, yes. It's just, you have just a too much information. Too much information leads to emotional overload. Emotional overload makes you a bad person, right? So yes, exactly, on the first one. The second part is really interesting, and I wish I could give you a good answer to it, but I can only give you a mediocre answer to it. The what is important in a dream? When I asked a neuroscientist, his name was Adam Har Horowitz. He's over at MIT. I said, well, you know, if dreams are so important, because it's not only humans that dream, just about every mammal dreams. And there's some indication that even a lot of insects dream. And even some people will suggest that plants dream. Like dreaming this, I mean, obviously the neurology would be different, but you do see sort of like these movements of physiological movements that are akin in a lot of living creatures. I asked him, like, look, if dreams are so important, then why don't we remember them? And his response was, well, why do you think the purpose is to remember them? Maybe the purpose is just to experience them. Mm-hmm. Like, and because we often think that we are our memories. Like, you know, you think that you have this constant narrative that goes back to like your first memories or birth, or maybe before birth, I don't know. Like, but the truth is that since dreams are discarding information all the time, you don't actually have a constant memory back to your beginning. You really just have right now and the thoughts that are, you're accessing your past. Like, I know you probably played a sport in high school. Maybe you didn't, but like you might have played a sport in high school.
Sure.
You're not thinking about the sport right now.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right, but it didn't come up in this conversation. This is the first time you thought about that sport in high school. It wasn't relevant right now until you just accessed it with your brain. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is, it just became relevant, but your consciousness didn't need it. So for all intents and purposes, when we were talking 2 minutes ago, you didn't play a sport in high school. There was no relevant reason to bring that in. So in the question of what is important in a dream to actually remember, the only way I can answer it is to say your dreams are already doing what they're supposed to do. You don't need to influence in them. If you do influence them, you might be changing the overall outcome.
Okay.
That can be beneficial in some cases, and we can go to that in some other cases. But your question was like, what is actually useful to bring out in the future? Only the stuff that is useful to you. Right. And it's punting. It's saying, like, look, if you had a dream that then you feel emotionally was meaningful because you had it, then it is meaningful. Okay. And that's the only way to answer that.
Okay. Scott Carney, investigative reporter. We're talking about his book Dream here on Guys Radio. Lucid dreaming, then, in terms of are there ways, Scott, from your research, that we can participate more in these dreams, or should we just be experiencing them?
Yeah. So neuroscientists hate lucid dreaming. Everyone I talked to about it, I was like, oh, so look, I asked the same question you did. And they're all like, lucid dreaming? That's not even dreaming. because if dreams are supposed to be automatic and it's supposed to be a thing that happens automatically in your brain, lucid dreaming does exist. Like, you can do it. You can, you know, focus on your hand, play with light switches. You can sort of become aware that you're in a dream world or you're not. But you actually don't get any emotional processing time. There's no clinical outputs that they have identified from lucid dreaming. It's more akin to entertainment. So if you want to get into lucid dreaming and you want to have a very entertaining, like your own movie, and you can do whatever you want. You can fly, you can have sex, you can, you know, read books, meet historical characters, whatever, you can do it. But physiologically, it does not appear to have the same restorative cognitive effects. It's sort of like an extension of actually being awake.
Yeah, to me, it's if you could it's another, it's an alternate reality. It's a separate reality, as Castaneda said. If you can get into that dream and you can participate, you're living in another dimension at that time. Instead of just experiencing it around you, you're participating, but kind of a separate subject. How about the importance or lack of importance of keeping a dream journal? I kept a notebook, a composition book by my bed for a couple of years, and I'd wake up whenever it was in the middle of the night, it would be pitch black in the room. I'd just start writing, and I'd wake up the next day and I'd have five pages written. And I didn't know what to do with them, but I felt that the process of writing them down, and I don't go back and read them, was helpful to me. And I don't know how.
No, absolutely it was. You know, I do it a sort of a different way. Sometimes I'll keep a notepad near my bed. And you know, sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, why am I not asleep? Right? You know, this is the feeling that, that we usually have. Ah, I want to be asleep. And the truth is that you have these cycles. Naturally, humans are polyphasic, which means we have multiple sleep patterns. You know, you have these 90-minute cycles. Often there's just a natural break where humans are normally awake, and especially in the pre-electric lighting eras, you are normally awake for like 15 minutes or an hour at night, and then you go back to sleep. It was never a pathology until we started like having this sort of 9-to-5 attitude about sleep. And the anxiety you feel is like you feel like you should be asleep. I have found that instead of stressing out about those ruminations, I try to realize that my brain is very wide right now. I'm getting all of this extra, you know, free association just because I'm very relaxed. And if I'm thinking about a thing that's getting on me, and you have a thing that's getting on you, I have things that get on me, I find that if my brain will run through scenarios about that thing, like, I don't know, I have to go file taxes. I'm like, how am I going to file taxes in a way that minimizes my exposure or whatever, right? I will then write down the idea that came to me after like 5-10 minutes of rumination. I will put that in the notebook. And the fascinating thing is after I've ruminated and written it down, I fall right back to sleep because my brain's like, okay, you did something with it. And I'd say about 50% of the time that rumination was useful. Like literally I was like, oh my God, that was a good insight. I can use this. I can actually do something with it.
Do you think writing it down kind of locks it in to, in terms of a learning mode for you?
I do. I think that you know, that creative, you know, that creative space allows you to think, and then it wants a solution. It wants to put it as an output, and making it, you make it concrete when you write it down. It becomes the output, and the brain's like, cool, you can take care of that later. And for me, that works really well. In terms of like a dream journal, like, do I really want to remember every moment of the dreams? I have not done that. That's not really what I was interested in. But if you find that it was useful for you, then it was useful because your brain is creating these abstract thoughts for it's thinking about these things for some reason. Why not record it and realize that it might just be nonsense? Right. But what if it's not? Like, what if there was something really cool there? I try not to like overstress anything. Remember, it's not dreams are always perfect or they're always nonsense. It's really how you adapt and use those later in the integration period.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you write it down, there's a possibility that by just doing that and reviewing, there's kind of a subconscious review. You might glean something there like, oh, that's what this dream was trying to tell me, possibly. So that's kind of cool. I want to ask you the real money question here, Scott, from your research. So many Americans are sleep deprived and so many people have trouble falling asleep. You mentioned a couple of methods in the book, the Yoga Nidra, and also the Rosenberg Protocol, I think.
Right.
What are some ways that you can help our audience in terms of ways they may be able to be helped fall asleep?
Yeah, the most important one is charge your cell phone in another room. Like, I kid you not, like, that is the most important because these devices just, what happens is people have this tendency to, as before they fall asleep, they scroll through stuff.
Right.
Which is focused, right? Your eyes are literally focused at something that's only a few inches from your face, right? And you're getting this information, like maybe something bad happened in politics, right?
Maybe something bad
happened in the government. And then that's priming your sleep. That's priming you to dream about that stuff. Because the next thing you do is you put it down and then you try to sleep, but you've just given all that information. It's much better to wind down slowly. Mm-hmm. Read a book, you know, just meditate, just zone out and do that sort of stuff is really, really useful first. The other thing is like, it's like the power of ritual. What is a ritual? A ritual is just something that you create with an intention behind it. It doesn't need to be big. It doesn't need to be like a high Catholic mass or a shamanic retreat in the mm-hmm. doing ayahuasca in Peru. Like it can just be like a thing that you do that is meaningful to you. And by giving it meaning, it helps you fall asleep. So reading a book could be your ritual to fall asleep. And that stuff is really, really important.
It is mine. Yeah.
It's a great one. It's an awesome one.
Because it really helps.
It's slower. And the Rosenberg Protocol, and I have a few others that I talk about, is very simple. It's an eye movement thing where you lie down on your back and you stretch and then you move your eyes all the way to the right for like 10 seconds, 15 seconds. You bring them back to the center and then you move them all the way to the left for a while. You bring it back to the center and you're just doing this as a physiological action to prime yourself for sleep, to balance the sides of your body, to balance your experience, to do something that you don't usually do. It's not hard, but creating a ritual, any ritual, will start to connect your body to your mind and allow you to do things that are your desires. And if you make the eye movement your desire to go to sleep, it creates that placebo response for you.
Awesome. My special guest on Guys Guys Radio, the fascinating investigative reporter and best-selling author, Scott Carney. We talked about the book today, Dream, the Art and Science of Slumber. Scott, tell everybody where they can learn more about you.
So I have a really active YouTube channel, Scott Carney on YouTube, and a podcast called Scott Carney Investigates. Those are the best places. If you want to see my constant stream of somewhat interesting ideas, go there. Also, my website, scottcarney.com. Put my name into Google, things will come up, and then you can choose your own adventure.
Awesome. Well, I'm so glad you came on the show. There's so many other books and so many other topics, including what it's like to be an investigative reporter and journalist, rather. And I hope you'll come back, and you did a great job. Thank you so much, Scott.
Great. Let me know. Thanks.
Okay. You got it.
It's Guys Guy Radio.
Okay, what a fascinating conversation with our special guest, first-time guest on Guys Guys Radio, investigative reporter and best-selling New York Times writer, Scott Carney. And we talked about dreaming, sleeping, and napping. What did we get out of our conversation? What did we learn that we can use? I think we learned that the power of ritual is really important when it comes to being able to fall asleep at night. Getting into routines when you're going to go to bed at the same time if possible, you're going to wake up at the same time as possible, you're not going to play around with the phone when you're in bed at night or in the morning first thing, and you're going to put that aside for the time frame that takes you to relax at night so you can get your good night's sleep and also so you can wake up refreshed in the morning and not just jump right into your device. But routines are important. I think another thing is, for me at least, has been hydration. Just making sure you drink enough water. You don't want to get up in the middle of the night like five times or something, but you want to be hydrated enough because if you're not, you will get up because you'll be stirring because your body will be kind of like flipping around because it needs hydration. It's not properly hydrated. So you have to find a balance as to when you take in your water throughout the day and make sure you have enough that you're properly hydrated so you can sleep well. So my special guest, Scott Carney, investigative journalist. I really enjoyed the conversation. We learned a lot about sleep, dreaming, and napping here on Guys Guys Radio. We're here on KCAA every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Pacific time. The show rebroadcasts. We're now on three times a week on KCAA, Saturday night at 8 p.m. Pacific time and Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Pacific time. So three times on KCAA, plus all our other platforms we're part of. The podcast, YouTube, and Rumble post worldwide throughout the day on Thursday, and we're on UK Health Radio 4 times every weekend and on demand. Now, UK Health Radio is a digital radio show, so it's on your computer, on the internet, and you can dial it up anytime you're online, and you can find Guys Guys Radio there on demand. The YouTube and Rumble versions that post Thursdays, you can watch the interview portion of the show. And if you enjoy the guests and content I bring you each and every week to Guys Guys Radio and Guys Guys TV, I would ask you to do us a favor. It doesn't cost you a thing. Just subscribe to our platforms, rate, review, subscribe. If you can, subscribe to our YouTube. That really helps us out a lot. So we're here every week for you on Guys Guys Radio. The purpose of the show is to bring you entertaining guests with new information that are bringing some added value to the show that'll help you live your best life. You can also catch more about me and my work and all of the topics we've covered here on Guys Guys Radio on my website. My website is robertmanni.com. I've got over 300 blog posts about life, love, the pursuit of happiness, all kinds of things we covered on the show here. And you can also download 3 free chapters of my novel, The Guy's Guy's Guide to Love, which is really the source material for everything Guy's Guy. It's a rom-com. It's a sexy romp through the fast-moving, high-stake world of Madison Avenue advertising in New York, where I worked for many years, and it's been called the men's successor to Sex and the City by iconic author Dan Wakefield. So please check it out. You can download 3 free chapters on the website, and then you can pick up the physical copy or digital copy of the book wherever you purchase your books. And also, I write a column for UK Health Radio's digital magazine. It's a fast-growing magazine. It's called Health Triangle Magazine. I do a series that's also on my website, but at first it goes up on UK Health Radio's magazine. It's called Aging is a Choice, and it's about all the things I do and have learned about how to kind of manage the aging process so we maintain our chi, our energy, and our vitality as we go through this crazy world we live in and as we go through our lives and get the best out of it, because it's not necessarily how many years you live. It's about how best you live those years. So Guys Guys Radio, I'm here for you, bringing you guests that I think you'll enjoy, that I think you'll connect with, and I think we're doing a good job of it. We've done over 700 interviews. We've got a lot more very interesting people lined up over the next coming months. I want to thank my wonderful producer, Chris. I want to thank my strategy lead, Ryan. And I want to thank all of those guests, those 700 thought leaders that I've interviewed over the years. But most of all, I want to thank you, our wonderful growing audience, for being there, spreading the word, and just being part of the show. I thank you for allowing me into your time and into your mindset and into your life. So Guys Guys Radio, we're back next week. Until then, like I always like to say, guys, finish first.